Angie's List is now Angie, your home for everything home. Angie still has the same top pros and reviews you've counted on for more than 20 years, only now you'll also get access to all the tools you need to make your home a happy place. Inside, outside, big or small, Angie helps you find the right solution for whatever you need done, all from your phone. It's simple to find upfront pricing and instantly book hundreds of projects. You can even search pricing guides to see what others paid for similar jobs and easily compare quotes from top local pros to make sure you're getting a fair price. From lawn care to repairing the AC to the project of your dreams, Angie has your home projects handled from start to finish. Plus, when you book and pay through Angie, they'll cover your project up to the full purchase price plus limited damage protection with their happiness guarantee. Make your home an Angie home. Check out Angie.com today. And for more on the happiness guarantee, go to Angie.com/happiness-guarantee.htm.
Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, creator and writer of That 70s Show, Mark Brazil, talks about writing a script under a deadline.
Almost immediately when they left, I realized there's a rat in my house. There is a rat in my house. I bathe in sanitizer, so I am horrified by this development. And I know I've got 3 days to write a script, and I also have a woman from Michigan who's a bartender at Dublin's, whose name is Amanda, who's infecting my entire brain because I love distractions, and she was distracting. She has this beautiful snake, 6 foot, 7 foot long, and she's in the bikini, and she says to me, "Would you like to see me feed the snake?" And I'm like, "I would like nothing better than to see you feed the snake, especially in that bikini."
Today on the show, Hollywood's own Mark Brazil talks about writing a script under a deadline. Stay close.
Hey, it's Mark Brazil, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show for almost 9 years now, Mark Brazil, I'm celebrating 9 years in July, or you're a new time listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys had a chance to listen to the show last week with comedy writer Andy Cowan. Maybe you know him, Mark.
I do know Andy Cowan.
Andy Cowan was on the show last week.
We worked on Third Rock together.
Well, there you go. He's a really funny guy, and his topic was Tales from Hollywood. So, you would probably have very much the same, not, your story's different this week, but Tales from Hollywood, that's you too, that would be.
Oh, I've seen so much. I got here in like 82, I was 20 years old, and it was absurd. But I remember Andy and I worked on Third Rock together, and I annoyed him to no end. And it was my first sitcom. And, you know, I had ADD and ADHD and everything that you could have. And I'm like a joke guy because I had been a stand-up comedian who many times you don't work well in a room. And so I would just like blurt out jokes all the time. And Andy got to the point where he goes, "I'm going to make a buzzer so I can buzz you to be quiet."
You know, that's really funny you should say that, because that's the way he was on the podcast. Everything was a joke. So he was that way.
Right. Yeah, he just, there is a little bit of competition in every room.
Yeah, sure. Oh, that's really interesting. Well, listen, you guys, go back and listen to Andy's story, but not today, because today I'm here with another comedy writer. You are what they would call a big deal in Hollywood.
Yeah, well, okay. I was a showrunner, which is also, that's a semi smaller category. Jimmy Vallely has a greatest, like you say, what is a showrunner exactly? Jimmy Vallely said a showrunner is a writer producer who still has to write and produce, but then also has to run a 7-Eleven. So
run a 7-Eleven.
That was sort of the most perfect description of what a showrunner is.
So you guys, Mark Brazil is here. Brazil with two L's. What is that name?
Well, you know, what's funny is that name was Obercell when they came over to Ellis Island, my great-grandfather, and it was spelled O apostrophe B-R-A-E-S-E-L. Most people think the guards changed it or the immigration people changed it. I honestly believe we did research in Ireland and all we found was a horse thief, and I think that's probably why he changed his name, because he came from Yeah.
But it's so different.
Yeah, nobody believes I was Irish. And the weird thing is, in high school, my best friend was named Mark Poland.
Oh, funny.
And we would introduce ourselves to each other, and they go, "You're not a friendship, you're an axis."
That's really funny. An axis.
He moved out here. I moved out here. His brother Chris moved out here. His brother Chris was the guitarist for Megadeth.
Oh, how funny.
And Mark was the drummer for White Zombie.
Wow.
And so the three of us were like, oh my God, because we came from a pretty small town.
You must have had a lot of hair.
We had so much hair.
So much.
It's a tragedy now. But it's also payback, because I had the most beautiful hair you'd ever seen. So it's only fitting that I'm bald now.
That's really funny. Listen, so I'm really excited. Your topic today is writing under a deadline. And I mean, I guess at any writer's point in life, there's writing under a deadline. I mean, and not just for writers. I mean, my daughter's homework, you know what I mean? Like, starts it that morning. So there's all different kinds of deadlines. Do you work better under a deadline?
I do. I actually need to have them. But I would actually panic more with my son and daughter's homework than I did with my own scripts.
Is that right?
Yeah. Transference or codependence. I don't know what it was. But this was... It was 26 years ago, and I remember that because my son was a baby.
Yeah.
And we lived off Melrose.
Wait, don't tell me the story.
Okay.
This isn't the story. Now, hang on. Don't tell me the story yet.
I'll hang on.
I'm gonna give your intro first, because your intro is so fascinating, because you've just done so much in this town. But before we get to Mark's story, I did want to remind you guys to follow me on Instagram and Twitter. You have to say that now, Mark. Did you know that? It's like a requirement.
Yes. Follow Christine on Instagram, or is it actually follow Storyworthy on Instagram and Twitter?
Yeah, exactly. And it's at Storyworthy, which is convenient. And of course, you, Mark Brazil, you're over there on Twitter at the Mark Brazil with two L's, but you don't tweet that much, I noticed.
No, I really don't. And to be honest with you, I'm thinking of closing down both Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, because I find that writers will think of, look, I would rather paint the floor of the garage than actually write something. Mm. And so these things have become so sort of distracting to me that it's probably better for me to, you know. I'm on Facebook so much.
Oh, I see.
And I make so many jokes on Facebook. But it really is a time suck.
But it's a personal thing.
Right, it's personal. It's like, it's my own sort of...
So you can limit yourself.
That's... something that people with discipline do.
Yeah, I see. But it would also be, I mean, I feel like, at least in our industry, you know, everybody needs to be contacted one way or another. And so it's better to tell people how to find you than to not have that landing page. So even if you don't use Twitter, you don't shut it down, but you put in your profile, find me on Facebook or somewhere where you are at. And so then you're kind of directing everybody where you want them to be.
Right. I shouldn't shut it down. But the problem that was sort of revealed to me a couple weeks ago, because they banned me for a week because I had the audacity to say that the South was wrong and slavery was, I'm a Yankee.
Yeah.
So
you said that on Twitter?
I said some stuff on Facebook that got me banned for a week. And
A week on Facebook?
A week.
Wow, that's a lot, because I've been banned like 24 hours, but a week is a lot.
Yeah, I got a week. If I showed you, you'd understand. It was actually a quote from General Sherman.
I see. Did you quote him in it?
I quoted him, but I also said something about... it came from Trump saying that Robert E. Lee was a hero. And I was like, well, he was a traitor and a piece of garbage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I went pretty far. I said, we should have occupied the South. We still should occupy the South, obviously. They don't know how to sort of, they are not following us into the future. Anyway.
You know, my daughter's name is Alabama.
Oh, really?
And I'm
That's
totally
the best
starting,
name
yeah, but
ever,
I'm totally
though.
Starting to regret that.
No.
What is happening?
That is also a Doors.
What?
What is the Alabama song?
Oh,
by the Doors.
No, Neil Young's song. Neil Young,
too.
Yeah. Oh, Alabama.
Sweet Home Alabama.
A lot of those going around.
There's a lot of patriots. There's a lot of people fighting in Alabama. I think Alabama's going to overcome a lot of their... I think the people that didn't vote before, they're going to vote this time.
What do you think about people not shooting in Alabama in their support of, you know, trying to get this ridiculous thing overturned?
I'm in the same boat. I agree with David Simon almost constantly. David Simon created The Wire. I follow him on Twitter. It's David Simon at AO Despair. I think he's one of the brightest, best writers ever.
Okay.
He created The Wire, which I still think is one of the greatest shows ever made. And he's not going there, and anything that he might have had there, he's pulling out. And honestly, I don't think any of those people pay attention unless you financially hit them.
It's just that the artists and you know, the people who work there in Georgia, in Alabama, you know, those people don't agree with this draconian law. You know, they're the ones who were trying to fight it, and now we're going to punish them by not going there. I'm just trying to see the other side of the thing.
Let me tell you, just from a perfect, just from a plainly partisan state.
Yeah.
I want them to shoot everything in California.
Yeah, I see.
And I don't care which state does what. Yeah. I want everything shot in California because this is my state. Yeah. So regardless of why you get out of there, I'm saying, look, how could I not be a homie and say everything should be in California? Yeah. I want California to have all production.
Me too.
And so whatever.
Is that selfish?
No, it's not. It's
yeah,
what you.
Go Bears.
Well, it's California.
Go Cal Bears.
Oh yeah. Well, I still love the Buffalo Bills. So, but I did get on the Rams bandwagon, and I love the Rams. And you
now
know.
The Rams now or the Raiders now? I mean, who do you go for? Mm. Is it not the Raiders? It's going to be the Rams and
it's,
the who?
It's Rams and
Jaguars.
It's Chargers. It's the Chargers. Who, you know, I lived in San Diego for years, and I love San Diego, but I used to call it Bland Diego.
Yeah.
Because it's yeah. just,
and
if
it's
you look at LA and SF,
white. For being so close to Mexico, it's very white.
Yeah, I actually. Sold cars on the border of Mexico when I was 19 through about 24.
Who you were working at a car dealership, or was this like a?
I was at a car dealership, and
so it was legitimate.
Oh yeah, it was a Chevy dealer. I was on a Volvo dealer,
and you were selling to Americans.
Yeah, I was selling a lot to the military because that's who really bought down there.
Because then they were taking them over the border.
Well, yeah, you still can just take whatever car you want. Sure. I used to go to the auctions all the time because they would repossess cars that were caught in drug deals, and we would go to the auctions and buy all kinds of muscle cars. And,
do you still like cars?
I love cars.
How many cars do you have?
Well, now I'm down to just two, but at one point I had, probably 7-8 Porsches.
Did you have a garage that size?
I didn't. I should have.
What did you do with the cars?
I had a garage that could hold a couple of them, and then I would keep them in other places, or I would store them here and there. But, you know, I've had such a tragedy with cars. I destroyed a GT2, which is like a $200,000 Porsche that they made 100 of. I came
they
back
from...
They
only made 100 of those
they
cars?
They only made 100, and
what
I destroyed
did you do to
one.
Yours? How?
Well, it spun out on gravel on Moore Park, in a construction site early in the morning because the tires were cold. And it
how
just
fast were you going?
30.
30 and you spin out. What, did you hit the brake quickly?
Yeah, I hit the brake because somebody pulled out in front of me where Moore Park and Riverside go into. They didn't see me.
The 101.
Well,
it's all right there.
Right. Well, this was like actually, you know, Moore Park and Riverside connect.
Yeah.
It's not really Riverside. It's just a little loop.
Yeah.
And so he didn't see me and he pulled out and I... wheels are cold, there's gravel, I spun my wheel, the car just starts spinning and it hits the curb and it breaks off both driver's side wheels, you know, and I stopped right next to a tree and the airbags and everything. It was
were
fantastic.
You okay?
Yeah, I just hit my head on the...
Were you stunned?
I was really amazed that I had just destroyed this car.
Who did you call 911? Did
called? I called 911.
And you,
I sat
you
there
like,
with
you
it.
You say what?
I say, I need a tow, and it's got to have a flatbed. And so they take the truck, or they take this GT2, they take it to the dealership. The dealership talks to AAA, who hated me at this point, because I'd also had two of them stolen out of my garage like 2 years before.
God.
And so they said, look, we'll give you $150, and it's totaled. And I said, great. 15 years later, that car shows up in Missouri as a demo at a dealership. The guy who buys it spends a fortune and then drives it like for a couple of days and realizes it's going down the road sideways. There's no way to fix
oh
that
my
car.
God.
So it's like a
like
whole fraud.
Chassis was off.
Yeah, it was just terrible. so I've gotten over the car thing. I've actually
but you sell Porsches?
No, I have a BMW now.
Interesting.
And I also have a big huge truck. I have a dually Ford 450.
Where do you park that?
It's outside the house, but it's got you have to have that to haul a horse trailer. I have a 3-horse trailer with a living quarter that, you know, my wife competes. We would go.
No kidding.
Yeah, she's
in horse jumping or what?
She does reining, which is like spinning circles. sliding. It's amazing to watch.
Wow, that's the whole thing.
Yeah, she's very good at it.
Are you into the horse community?
I am into the horses, but my,
horses or the horse community? Like the whole thing. It's like a whole thing.
Well, yeah, you know everybody. Yeah. It's a very small world.
Yeah.
But my thing with, the thing I love most with horses, I just like to ride. I like to trail ride. And more than that, I like to chase cows. That's about as fun as it gets. And horses love it. They love to chase cows.
I would be so scared about not, hanging on, because I'm just thinking about them going like in quick jerky movements and.
They don't. You know, it's funny. It's like you keep a loose rein with, you keep your hands loose on a horse and you use your leg a lot.
Yeah.
You know, you use, you.
Both legs.
Both legs. Yeah. You leg them up, and that's how they do what they, but they love doing it. So.
And you do or don't have a saddle?
Oh, I have a saddle. Yeah. I probably have a couple, but you have the one that you love, and. You know, my wife is the one who has like a lot of.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Does she have the outfits too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she has leather chaps.
Wow, the whole thing.
Sometimes I'll wear them just by themselves and run down the street.
And that happens, yeah. Okay, well, listen, you guys, let's get right to Mark's story. You've been hearing him talk. You know he's a stand-up comedian. He's also a television creator and executive producer. He's most well-known as being the co-creator of the Fox Situation comedy That 70s Show, which aired for 8 seasons. That's a long time.
Yeah, they made 200 of them. It was shocking.
That's a long time, and it's in syndication.
Yeah, it's in syndication, and people still watch it, and somebody said to me, why do people still watch that show? It's been off the air 10, 11 years, and my theory is it already looked like a rerun when we made it, so it will never age.
No, it's perfect, it's perfect. My daughter still watches The Brady Bunch. She loves The Brady Bunch.
Yeah, it's a great
show. I mean, like, three people on it are dead, you know what I mean? Only the kids are alive.
Yeah, the Turners actually wrote the Brady movies.
Oh, I got to tell you, man, the Brady movies, the one with Gary Cole, and that is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen.
Gary Cole's hysterical.
He's a great actor, isn't he?
I just saw him on Veep.
Yeah, oh, he's fantastic. Ridiculous, yeah. What a talent.
Yeah.
You are quite a talent. You've also written on all sorts of shows like The Dennis Miller Show, In Living Color, Third Rock from the Sun, like you said, Mr. Rhodes, That 80s Show, Good Vibes, Lab Rats. So you're just writing and writing and writing.
Yeah, I love, I love it.
It's all comedy.
Yeah.
Do you write with a partner?
Yeah, actually, Felicia Michaels and I have been writing together.
I just recorded with her 2 weeks ago.
Did you really?
Yeah, I love Felicia Michaels.
We met in...
She's such a talent.
Yeah, we met in 1984.
Wow, that's neat.
We've been friends. That's
really
how long
neat.
We've been friends.
She's great. Yeah,
she really is funny.
She's a great comedian. She was on. I have another podcast called Screwed Up Stories, and she was on Screwed Up Stories. But I'm gonna get her on Storyworthy as well. Anyway, you guys, you can find Mark over on Twitter, like I said, at the Mark Brazil. He's not going to answer you because he's not on Twitter. But you can go there as a landing page, and that's going to send you over to Facebook, where you should have found him in the first place, because that's where he is. All right, you guys, whoever you are, put your hands together for Mark Brazil.
Okay, well, this is this story is from 26 years ago, and I was on a deadline to write a pilot for NBC. There's a twist in there. In that we had developed a pilot for a character who, well, it's Tom Rhodes, who's a comic, and he was going to be a public defender. He was a guy who was a great lawyer, and he decided to become a public defender because he wanted to give back, and he had graduated really high in his class. And so we were in our fantasy, John Lovitz is the boss who's constantly going, they're all guilty. Grease the skids. Don't waste your time. They're all bums. But Tom is like the guy, he's the crusader. He's like, no, I'm going to give all my clients. Anyways, write this pilot. I had a partner, Jennifer. We write this pilot, and I have a meeting with Warren Littlefield, and I'm in the parking lot after the meeting, and it's Thursday. And I said to my agent, he hates the show. He may have bought this show. He may have bought this premise, but he does not like it, and he does not want to do it. And my agent's like, that's crazy. What I was looking at was a huge rewrite over the next 4 days that I didn't think NBC wanted. So I said, do me a favor and call him and just say, Mark doesn't think you want the show. So my agent calls Warren from the parking lot of NBC on speakerphone. He goes, Warren, Mark has this idea that you really don't want the show. And Warren goes, yeah, I really don't. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. I'm so glad we said something. I can read stuff pretty good. So what that turned out to be, he wanted a teacher show. So now it's like, well, we have to write a teacher show. And it's really close to filming and pilot season and pickups and everything. And so a few of the people were like, I'm not doing it. And I said, well, y'all realize that when you say I'm not doing it, it's all over. Now I've already been paid. But I'm willing to write another thing to have a shot at the lottery. Because if you don't write it, it's over. And so everybody sort of agrees, okay, we'll see what you can do. Now, however it shook out, I know I have Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, because my wife's taking the baby up to Modesto to stay with her mom, because she knows I have to write a pilot, a totally new pilot with vaguely different characters. So she's taking the baby. And in the meantime, there's a woman who lives next door. Woman, I said, if I'm 30 something, she's 20 something. She just moved out here from Michigan. And there's such a 7-year itch thing happening with me. It's brutal. And I'm just going to admit that I don't look good at this point, but I'm like, I have an office. I write in the living room. There's a big window that I look out of. She had like 2 feet of grass where she would walk out and sit in a white string bikini. And I move my desk and then there's a mirror and I still see her and it's not helping me. So I got 4 days. As soon as my wife and child are gone, I had a Shar Pei. He's very stupid, but he was also very slow. He keeps freaking out. He keeps jumping off the couch, running towards things. Almost immediately when they left there, I realized there's a rat in my house. There is a rat in my house. I bathe in sanitizer. So I am horrified by this development. And I know I've got 3 days to write a script. And I also have a woman from Michigan who's a bartender at Dublin's, whose name is Amanda, who's infecting my entire brain because I love distractions. And she was distracting. And she was also delightful and nice and funny and pleasant. So it's not just that she was beautiful. It was like we were friends. We used to go camping together, all of us. I started smoking again on the camping trip because she walked around in jean shorts like Daisy Dukes. And I was like, dear God, I quit smoking. And my wife's like, why are you smoking again? I go, I don't know. So this rat becomes my obsession. And I don't think I get traps. I get glue traps. I get rat traps. I get snap traps. They're everywhere. I put them all around the edge of my bed. Like I'm in a tenement in Brooklyn. I'm going to get this thing and write my script. Oh my God. So I can't catch it. Days go by. And then I'm like, anytime Amanda like knock on the door or walks by or whatever, I'm like, well, I could write, but maybe I'll go have a drink with Amanda, you know, because she's out on the lawn having a cocktail. And so then the other thing about Amanda is she has a snake. She has this beautiful snake, 6 foot, 7 foot long. And she's in the bikini and she says to me, would you like to see me feed the snake? Which had been a topic. And I'm like, I would like nothing better than to see you feed the snake, especially in that bikini. I am a lech. All right. So I'm a bad man and I'm 30 and I'm just like a walking heart. I'm like everybody under 40 is. So she brings me into her apartment, which was beautiful, where she lived with another beautiful girl and her brother, who I really liked, Romano. And we walk into the bathroom and the snake's in the tub. She shuts the door. She's on all fours leaning over with the bag. And I hear something in the bag. And I hadn't really realized what was about to happen. But now I'm kind of horrified and titillated because this is literally the most erotic thing I've ever seen in my life is her in that white string bikini leaning down over the tub with a bag, which I found out had a mouse in it. Oh. And now I'm kind of horrified and I want to get out, but I can't. So she thumps it. She drops the mouse out. He's walking around drunk for a second and that snake goes whack and gets it. All right, so there's the mouse. Now I saw the snake and a mouse. And in my mind, I'm like, maybe I could borrow the snake. Maybe I could let the snake loose. But then I thought, it's going to bite the dog. And that's like a Dr. Seuss thing where you know it's just going to domino into some madness. Yeah. So now I'm back. Again, it's like I have to hold the dog in the bed because all around the bed are glue sticks and traps because I'm not thinking. I step on a trap too. And I stepped on a glue stick because I'm so disgusted that this rat is in my house. This is terrible. Animal rights people are going to lose their shit over this story. But I will say that I was a young man and not very bright. Finally, we catch that rat. Catch the rat. But what I hadn't really thought about was it's on a glue trap. Ugh. Now, what do I do? I hadn't thought about that. I can't release it. I wanted to catch it, and I had other traps where I could have caught it and then let it go outside, but this wasn't one of them. So now I'm stuck, and now it's pouring rain. It's the middle of the night. I'm trying to hold the dog to not go near the rat that's on the glue trap, and I realize I'm in the worst position I've ever been in. I have to kill something, and I don't like killing anything, but I couldn't get it off the glue trap, and I already knew that. I knew you can't get anything off a glue trap. I hadn't thought. So I did. I took it out back. It's pouring rain. I'm in my underwear and a pair of boots, cowboy boots. And let me just say, okay, this is horrible. I put a cinder block. I whipped a cinder block onto it, and the inside of that rat squirted all over me and my boots, and it sort of smelled like what I think hell will smell like. It was the worst smell I'd ever smelled. Oh. All right, so now here we go. Oh. But I haven't written the pilot. And it's Sunday night. And honestly, it's like that rat stands between me and my financial future and my child. So do I feel bad? I do feel bad. Would I change it? Probably not. I'd probably have more humane traps, try to find it, let it go. Now, here's the other. All right. I got a few hours before they come home. I've done what I had to do to get this. I'm sorry, there was vermin in my house. I have a tiny baby. I got it out. All I could think of, it's going to climb in the crib and chew his lips off. So I got rid of it. And you think it's over. But I only have a few hours to write this pilot. Well, I did write the pilot. I wrote the pilot in the middle of the night up until the time they came home. And then I found a baby rat. And now I'm like, I killed your mother. So now, you know, I had to raise the rat and then let him go. And so, but I did get the thing written, you know, and that was really, you know, and Amanda, of course, you know, just remained delightful and next door. And I would never do anything like that, but I would think it and admit to it.
Well, yeah.
That she's fantastic and beautiful, and I like hanging out with her.
A lot of women like that in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I know.
It's not that unusual.
No.
Okay, what was the name of the pilot? What was the premise?
It was Mr. Rhodes.
It was Mr. Rhodes, and so, but you had to make it into a teacher situation comedy.
Yeah, it became a teacher show, and Warren liked it, and it was on the air for a year.
And it was called Mr. Rhodes.
Mr. Rhodes, and Stephen Tobolowsky was on it.
Interesting.
Ron Glass was on it.
Nice.
Farrah Forkey. Allie Holden?
Listen, did you really find a baby rat? No, you didn't. You can say it if you... I'm just curious, because I've thought that would be the craziest of all.
And no, that ending is too good for me not to lie about.
Okay. I thought that maybe you would take that rat that was stuck on the glue trap and give it to that snake.
Well, the glue trap had toxins in it, and if the snake ate it, it would kill it. And Amanda was afraid the snake would get caught on the glue trap.
I can't believe she just took a bag of mouse and whacked it on the ground.
She was from Michigan. It's funny because we are, if you're an animal rights person, if you're vegan, if you're whatever, it's like this means, you know, I came from a place that was all hunting. Yeah. All hunting. They had deers and bears upstate New York. Yeah. They hung them out in front of the sporting goods shop, and that was life. And by the way, everybody ate them.
Yeah, even in my neighborhood, I remember seeing deers hung up on the neighbor's trees, you know, after hunting season, you know, like, oh, Mr. Huggins got a deer. He got an 8-pointer, whatever. They're, you know, so it was very casual. But I'm not even saying the animal rights part of it. I'm just saying you take a bag and in it, it's moving. The bag is moving. And now you take that bag and you whack it.
Yeah, she whacked it so he was kind of drunk. You know,
he's right.
But I'm thinking, when I walked in there, I thought, well, maybe it's chicken McNuggets. Maybe it's, I'm so stupid.
Yeah, maybe it's an egg.
Yeah, I thought, oh, no.
Maybe it's a dead fish.
But you can give them frozen mice and frozen rats.
Yeah, I get
and
it.
Frozen,
but, a warm rat now and then, you know.
Yeah, but oh, man, watching him spring into action was pretty amazing. But also, you know, here... By the way, metaphorically speaking, woman, snake, temptation.
I know. I'm like, the bikini, oh my God. All of it. Michigan, she's so like a virgin out here.
Well, that's the other thing, too. Every guy that walked by while she's sunning herself on her 2 feet of grass on Melrose Avenue, everyone chattered her up, and she was completely delightful to them. And I just thought,
you're so green.
They're bad because they think like me and they like you, so don't talk to them.
No, it's not. It's her. She's so green.
Yeah, she had no...
She's so green, and you can't know until you live here a while. But if she worked at Dublin's, that was a really popular bar.
Yeah, nobody... There weren't a lot of ugly ones there.
Yeah, Dublin's was really hot, right on the Sunset Strip, near Crescent Heights, right?
Right.
And that place was on fire. I remember... Not on fire, literally. It was it was so hot because I did comedy there because they had comedy nights, like the three different levels or whatever. It was a great club. But I remember when they announced it was going to close and I thought, that's impossible because it's constantly, but it's like saying Barney's Beanery is going to close.
Right.
It was like, what are you talking about? It doesn't make sense. And then it did.
It's real estate.
It's too bad. Yeah, it's real estate.
People
and
cash
that whole
out.
Area is just so, just huge. I mean, wow. Just incredible.
I was at Sycamore Tavern last night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they do comedy there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were you doing comedy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
well, did there you go.
Sam Tripoli and Trevor Kevilla and those guys.
Yeah. I know Sam Tripoli. I don't know him well, but I know he's been around forever. Not ever, but he's...
I get it.
Hey, listen, I've been here in town for 21 years. You've been here for what, 31 years?
Yeah, I've been here a while.
And our careers are so similar. Okay, so you were taking this old pilot, turning it into a teacher pilot, and you said that you were taking the characters and altering them slightly. What did you mean by that? In other words, because you already had them cast, and so you needed to just slide it over?
Well, it was really like I didn't think I had enough time. I don't think any of us thought there was enough time to just throw out that entire thing that we'd been working on for a long time. And so it became vaguely, you know, if you have a great character, I didn't know how the dynamic changes really between the relationships between these people from one world to the other. And that's sort of what we did. And we had no time. And I mean, this thing, it's a miracle on every level. First of all, that we got a script ready. Second of all, the run-through was one of the worst things I'd ever seen. And Warren Littlefield said, do we even do this? Meaning cut your losses and don't film it?
Yeah.
And Peter Noah, who was the EP and the showrunner on that show, said, I've seen better. I think we can do it. And because of his reputation, Warren believed him. And we did bring it up quite a bit.
But is that common to do that, to take, because I think it's fascinating, and I've talked to a lot of comedy writers on this show, and I'm always, because I don't come from that side of things, I find it fascinating how a script and a character and a situation and everything breaks down so removed from, so you can take a character and just place them in any situation comedy. Is that what you're saying?
You got to have a deft hand, but I think you can. You know, I mean, if you look, I see Kelso all over the place.
Mm.
I mean, that character, I've seen him on God knows how
amazing.
Many shows.
Amazing, I guess so, yeah.
You know, and that's okay.
Yeah.
I'm happy, you know, I mean, it doesn't bother me at all. But there are certain types, you know, and I think that's why 70s work. I think everybody had those friends when they were growing up.
Oh, definitely.
They have the conspiracy, the bitter conspiracy, dark guy who comes from a broken home. They have
so brilliant.
The friend who's, you know, who just... Like, I remember the definition of Kelso is he's like, Kelso, you're dating two women. What happens, you know, what happens if they both find out? And he's like, well, that's the thing. I'm going to ride this thing until it blows up in my face. And Hyde's like, I'm glad you've thought this out. Because he didn't
so
care.
Honest.
Yeah, he just
I love
like,
it.
I don't know.
No,
got two
I grew
women.
Up in the 70s as well. I love that show. Are you kidding? I mean, just fantastic. And so I guess in that respect, I hear what you're saying, that those characters, you know, it's always going to be, you know, stereotypically, there's going to be the Fonzie and there's going to be the, you know, whatever. But I guess what I'm saying is like, Okay, so you had, was it a, what was the first thing, a medical thing? What
was No, it was a public defender.
A public defender thing. Okay, so you had like a courtroom kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's like, and it was like a night court with an icon, with a guy who was a crusader.
I see. And then you just take that and you say, okay, well, now we're in a school.
It was not every character.
The stories have to change, though.
All the stories change.
All the stories.
But at this point, you know, I was, back then, I was actually much more, all you're concerned with was the pilot.
Yeah.
And so nowadays you need a seasonal sort of an arc. You need a synopsis. You need a pilot outline. You need to.
Because all 10 episodes are going to drop at the same time? Is that
well,
what you mean?
On Netflix, I'm still not in Netflix. I still am going to NBC and Fox and sure. CBS and ABC. Those are the places I still go to because I feel like if I can play in that arena, I should.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Nothing wrong with Netflix, but yeah. It's just my thing. I'd rather make 24 a year. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? It's uh-huh. It's like, I don't want to make 10.
I see what you're saying. In other words, you're talking about project length? What are you talking about?
Well, I made 26 70s 1 year.
Right.
I want to make that many episodes.
So you want 24, 30 minutes. You don't.
No, I mean, over the course, the reason there's 200 episodes of 70s is because we were on 8 years.
Yeah, right.
You know, and we made 20 plus
amazing,
a year.
Amazing.
So, I mean, look, what I mean is they'll make 10, then you won't see it again for God knows how long. And,
I know.
And that's so fine, true. But I don't really like that. I like shows like Big Bang or like something like that, you know, where it's consistent.
Yeah.
Deeply consistent. Yeah. You know, Lucille Ball made 35 episodes a year. They had their 2-week vacation.
Yeah.
So I love that.
It was a
schedule.
Different. Well, that was a different. I mean, in terms of that was different as well. I mean, in terms of them. Same with movies. You know, you think about the studios how they did a movie a week. That was it.
There were like 24 Parks and Recs a year.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know, so it happens. I'm sure there's 24 Brooklyn Nine-Nines.
But you loved Veep. It's too bad it's over.
I love Veep. Yeah, and I thought it was brilliant.
What else do you like to watch?
I love Game of Thrones, everybody. You know, I mean,
I don't. I watch the first one and the last one of each season. That's my goal because I'm never going to follow it anyway. Like for me, it's just, I don't know. It's to a level I don't, it's hard for me. It's like Star Wars or something.
Right,
I don't know.
Right.
It's just not my, my thing.
Atlanta is my favorite show.
Is that right?
And it concerns me because now he's doing another show and that Donald Glover, it sort of bums me out because I don't want Atlanta to suffer for him to do the other. Because I think Atlanta is absolutely the most brilliant show on television.
Interesting. And so you're saying if Donald Glover splits his time, something's going to go down.
Well, it's like you neglect the other one. I love Deadwood, too. I'm very excited about the return of Deadwood.
Aren't they making that a feature film as well?
I believe they were, but I see that HBO has it now, so I don't know what's going to happen there.
My dad loved Deadwood. That was his favorite show.
That's Deadwood is it, and it has two of the guys that I've worked with before, Jim Beaver. Stephen Tobolowsky, who I love both those guys.
Yeah, Jim Beaver's been on this show before. He's a great person. He's such a great person. You know, you see Jim Beaver out in any circumstance, he always remembers my name. He remembers, like, whatever's going on. Like, he's just so friendly.
He's delightful.
Yeah, he really is.
I like The Patriot on Amazon, too, which is Kurtwood Smith's show, but it's a brilliant show. It's amazing.
I don't know that show.
You should watch it.
The Patriot. I'm going to write it down. Do you watch stuff like The Act? Like, stuff that's a little juicier? Patricia Arquette plays the mother of Gypsy Rose. That story, it's a true story of a mom with Munchausen's disease or whatever.
Patricia Arquette's amazing.
Stunning.
Escape from Dannemora. Did you see that?
Exactly.
That's Ben Stiller.
And that's an amazing,
unbelievably
amazing
great
series as well. There's so much to watch.
There is a lot to watch.
It's a lot going on, which is exciting in a way because that means more production than ever.
Yeah.
But more competition,
right?
Obviously. So it's...
I love Archer, too. It's a cartoon
I've never
on
seen
FX.
That yeah. Is it good?
I think it is. I have eclectic sort of watching it.
Let me ask you something. Does the struggle in show business ever stop? I mean, because in other words, you've been successful, and I'm sure materially you got what you want, or you have choices.
Right.
And so, but then that inner thing to create and to produce and make it happen, that doesn't go away, does it?
No, but a lesson I didn't learn. A long time ago, I believe it was 1999, I was going to the World Series on the Fox Party Bus, wow. which is hysterical that they called it the Fox Party Bus. And it's San Diego and the Yankees. The Yankees are going to win. Mariano Rivera is going to shut the game down. I realized how weird it was. Well, anyways, I get on the bus and I see Robert Altman. And I'm like, oh my God, Robert Altman is on the Fox Party Bus.
Yeah.
And so I plant myself next to him because I want to hear everything. So we play poker for hours on the way down to the game. And Scott Wolf was there and Gillian Anderson and, you know, just a strange group of people, head at CAA or whatever. And so finally I said, hey, Robert Altman, I'm sorry. Can I ask you, why are you on the Fox Party Bus?
And he said?
And he said, well, I'll tell you, I had a pilot. There's a pilot that Gary Trudeau from Doonesbury.
Yeah.
Gary Trudeau and I wrote a pilot, and I directed it. And I go, oh, my God, when's that going to be on? And he goes, oh, they passed. And I was horrified. I was horrified because they passed on Robert Altman. And it not just horrified, I was terrified, too, because I thought, you're never good enough. You're never
Such
done.
Such a lesson.
Yeah. I didn't learn it. Like, yeah. I had a lot of hubris.
Yeah.
And I passed on a lot of stuff that I should have applied myself to. And I should have grabbed the ring when the ring, you know, like, you don't realize this is that. I was so young. I really was kind of young to have my own show and be the showrunner.
Yeah.
I was 30, early 30s.
That is young.
It was, you know. But I have no regrets about the trajectory of anything because it's really what has to happen
but
for you to...
But what should have happened to you? I mean, what do you wish would have happened?
Well, here's the thing. It's like rather than... Like they said, you have to do that 80s show because if I didn't do it, they were going to make big, huge offers to get another show, but to take Laura Prepon and Mila Kunis off 70s. And I didn't even get to the point where Mila and Laura would even talk about that. But I was like, I can't replace them. They're the two female leads. I can't replace them, you know, besides Stever Joe. But that was they wanted to make Laverne and Shirley.
Wow.
And they said, you need a companion show for your show. And so that 80s show was like an assignment from Sandy Grusho, which is fine. You know, my biggest problem with that was I was like, please, dear God, don't call it that 80s show. Because it's going to be compared to this thing, and this thing is already a big hit.
Wow.
And I didn't think it was like SVU or a cop drama where you could... I just didn't see it like that. Apparently nobody did.
But that's stunning, because I totally would have thought that as well. You know, you would think that, just like you said, I mean, I know the SUVs are... Is it SUVs? SVUs?
Yeah. SUVs CSIs. Are what people drive. But it would be a good show. All the cops in one car,
so let's
carpooling.
Say, you had Happy Days, then spun off to Laverne and Shirley, and which spun off to Chachi Loves Joni.
Spun off to Mork. But they were guest stars on a show.
Right, I know, but I hear what they're saying, that 70s show, essentially, the Goldbergs is that 80s show. I mean, in a way, but it's sort of a non-fictional family.
Yeah.
I mean, based on anyway. And they have, it is a stunning show in terms of the photographs, you know, that they, it's just stunning. I mean, the Goldbergs in terms of their portrayal of the 80s. But what I'm saying is, so that is logical to me as well, that it would just spin off. But you are coming from this angle and you know the business and you've been doing it for 8 years. And you're saying, if I have to do that, then my time is divided as well.
Yeah.
Right? That's what you thought.
But I also felt I was burned so bad by that I literally moved to Ojai and built a horse ranch.
Wow.
And I bought 100 acres up there and I turned my back on everything.
Do you
and
still
I had
have
eight
that?
Dogs. No, it got to a point where I got shot when I was there.
Shot by who?
Well, I had a gun on my, in a holster on my left side and I fell off a cliff and the gun butt hit a rock and it shot a bullet through my left leg.
Okay,
and
wait a
I
minute.
Had horses die,
wait
which
a minute.
Was
Are
horrible.
Are you sure you weren't in a movie? This sounds like a movie.
I know, it all sounds crazy and
you
bizarre.
You had a gun in your...
I had a gun because there was a bear on the property.
Okay.
The farmer had called me. He
all
said,
right.
there's a bear on the
all
property.
Right.
She has a cub with her. And I was like, I'm not going out. It's midnight. My
you
stupid dog had to pee.
Lead.
I'm sorry, I did bury the lead. My stupid dog had to pee at midnight. And all day long, I had kept them on leashes, kept them inside. We had eight dogs.
Yeah, eight dogs
walking
and a bear.
So the bear and a cub had broken my fence down, chain link fence, laying on the ground. And the farmer called me. He said, look, there's a bear and her cub making its way through your property back to Angeles National Forest, whatever. I was on the very edge of the forest. So all day long, I'm really careful because I'm terrified of running it. Because she's going to try to kill me. It's got a cub with her. And the cub was 200 pounds. If she's 400, he's 200.
Yeah.
So they chased it off with a tractor. That was how they got it to leave their property. And then it broke my fence down. And so it's midnight. It's pouring rain. I'm walking the dog. I'm on like a Devil's Peak type plateau. I can't see anything. The dog leash gets out of my hand. I have a 45 with one in the chamber on my left-hand side, on my left hip. Fall off a cliff. When I go off after the dog, I drop 7-8 feet. The gun butt, of course, it hits a rock. It fires. This is a story I've told it so many times. My wife comes out on the porch. What are you doing? And I thought to say, not getting shot, but I was shot. And I didn't realize it. So I climb back up. I finally get to the porch. She's like, well, by the way, we have 8 dogs. She's like, where's the dog? I go, we have 7 others. Let's not be concerned. I hope the bear eats it because that's why I have a bullet that went through it went in my hip and came out above my knee.
So was it bleeding?
Oh,
was
my God.
Blood was everywhere.
Oh,
yeah. Did you have on pajama bottoms?
No, I had a pair of jeans on.
Okay.
Luckily. And so I walked in the house. I tied it off. I had a gray t-shirt on, Calvin Klein. I remember it. I tore it up. I laid on the kitchen floor. I tied off both holes.
Oh, my God.
Because I knew there's no ambulance coming for a long, long time. We're on 100 acres in the middle of nowhere.
So there's an entry wound and then the exit.
Yes. I was lucky in that sense. Oh, if you're going to have a bullet hole, you want to have 2. So the thing came out. Because otherwise it's in there and I got to do something to get rid of it.
How do you know it's not 2 straight on bullet holes? Because one has the skin goes out.
Well, one is just teeny tiny, like the size of your pinky. And the other one is like the size of a silver dollar.
So which one is the bigger one?
The exit.
Exit is bigger.
Exit's big.
Oh, God. By the way, gross.
It was so close to my hip, too. It basically cauterized on the way in and out. And which I learned when I went to the hospital. They're like, I said, what do we do now? He goes, well, you can't do anything. You just got to tie. He goes, you have to. It's going to leak.
Ugh.
So you just got to keep changing the gauze, I got shot, antibiotic shots and all this other stuff.
Listen, have you always been able to tell a story with so much detail or do you work on it?
No, it's amazing. I have a pretty nice recall. I don't have photographic, but I do have an amazing recall for things, you know, and it's a gift.
But it's also because it's like muscle memory, probably, because you've been writing for so long.
Yeah.
You probably know in your head how a story has to go together. I mean, obviously, I'm doing a storytelling show, and I wrote a book, and I do a lot of storytelling in town. But I work on those pieces, you know, like to get the right words together and to get the right adjectives. And you're just sitting here talking to me, talking off the top of your head. It seems you are.
I am,
yeah,
I know.
Your word choice is, like, perfect.
Thank you. But I've always looked at this forever as like the Miles Davis thing where it's like, if I have to really, not that Miles, he's brilliant. But when I think of jazz or I think about improv, I think about the thing where it's like, I used to watch comics and there are certain comics that you go, oh my God, Kevin Meaney's a brilliant comic who would just, it would flow. He would never do the same act the same way.
Amazing.
And those are the guys that I always really worshiped.
Yeah.
When I see some guys who have a rap, and they even laugh or do like what you think is improv, and then they do it 7 nights in a row.
Right.
It leaves me cold.
Yeah,
because I feel like I can appreciate practice. I can appreciate that, but I also feel like if there isn't a sort of an improvisational or a jazz type quality to the thing, I can't do it.
I totally get that. I dated a guy who was just like that. I mean, every nuance, every breath. Every laugh, everything was planned out.
I can't do it.
It was really gross. By the way, Miles Davis, huge heroin addict, of course.
Yeah.
Did you read the book, Miles?
No.
Oh, my gosh. You got to take this with you. I mean, you got to know this. You got to read this book, Miles. It's stunning.
It's not
an autobiography. It's a biography of him. But he didn't write it. It is stunning, though. It's very thick. But what a great book. And it translates through his music, you know, to different arts, like what you're even talking about, you know, writing or comedy, you know, it definitely translates. So you still like to perform comedy as well, don't you?
Yeah, I went back 2 years ago because my baby girl just graduated from Oregon in April.
Nice.
And my son went back to New York. He went to Pace. They're both done. They're both adults now. And so a few years ago, I realized, you know, I really did love that. I did it from probably like 82 to 92. I'm very young, but I missed it. And so, and Wendy Liebman of all, she just saw me and she's like, I was at Vitello's cause I know. And she's like, you got to do this next month. She got Sue Kalinske to come back.
Yeah.
So, and Randy Lubis happened to be there from Pittsburgh.
Nice.
And he runs the Ventura Harbor Club. And he said, buddy, if you're going to do this room, you better practice, you know, because I hadn't been on stage in 20 years. So he literally opened Ventura Harbor to me to be bad, to rough it out, to do it. This was
that's
probably
so kind.
3 years ago. Yeah, he was fantastic. He's a big part of it.
That's the good thing about stand-up is you can go back. It doesn't. You can take a break and go back. I recently did that. I'd done it for years, for like maybe 5 or 6 years, and then I didn't do it for 15, and just started doing it again about 3 months ago. I only have one joke that I could save. One.
I don't have very...
From 15 years ago. Can you save any... Did you save any material?
I did.
How much?
Well...
2 minutes? 5 minutes?
2 minutes.
Yeah.
In the beginning, I was doing a lot of the older stuff, which also I didn't like anymore. Because it was written by a 25-year-old who's a jerk.
Your perspective is totally different.
Right.
No, that's what I'm saying. So, in other words, I'm saying you can always go back to comedy, but for the fact that you might have more confidence, but you got to change all your material for the most part. Because you're not that person anymore. Unless it was like a really flat, straight joke. You know?
Here's like a great joke, which is actually, it's not even a joke. It's just a true story. And I've probably had it for 30 years. I said to my mother when I was 10 years old, and my mother's great. She's Irish Catholic, tough. I said, Mom, I'm like, what if you have kids and they're ugly or stupid? And she goes, you do just like your father and I did. You just love them.
Oh, man, that's tough.
She just said that to me, though, and it's not a joke. She did not mean it as a joke, but in retrospect, I was like, holy shit.
That's really funny. That's really, really funny. So she had a sense of humor.
She did, but it was more like she spoke from truth.
Yeah.
She's just going to give you truth. You can like it or not.
Hey, listen, I also heard that you are recently sober, as it were.
Yeah, probably October 8th, 2018.
That's a big deal, man.
Yeah, my sister... died. My sister sort of raised me and I went off the skids, you know, and I had been like pretending to be sober because I'd stopped drinking, but I was still smoking weed every day. And that left the door open for me to go back to super bad habits. And I've been, you know, I say, and this is just the truth, this is the longest I've been sober since eighth grade.
You look really healthy.
Thank you. It's been I'm coming up on 9 months and it's amazing the gifts that come if you pay attention to your life.
And so are you exercising a lot?
Not a lot.
Well, what do you do? You gotta walk, you hike, you
I
gym?
Live by Runyon.
Oh, there you
know,
go.
And I have a little dog and we go to Runyon a lot.
Do you still hunt bear?
I have never hunted in my life because when I was a kid, my friend shot a rabbit and I was horrified.
I see. Well, my point is you had a gun in your pants and you were looking for a bear.
Yes.
And you weren't looking for
it. I got to tell you the end of that story, though, because the dog did survive. The bear did not get the dog. But when I'm laying on the floor of the kitchen, I had said to my wife, I said, please, for God's sakes, let's be calm. Let's be Hannibal Lecter. Calm. I got to bring the heartbeat down. She didn't do that. She dropped a Jeep in the ditch. She was terrified. She was freaking out.
Wait, so she was driving you?
She was trying to get down to open the gate for the fire department, the paramedics, and the cops, and it's pouring rain, and it's a mess. Anyways, she did not help me stay calm, but I can stay calm in almost anything.
Good.
It's weird. So the punchline is when the cop walks in, I had set the gun and the magazine on the kitchen table, and he goes, what happened here? And I said, she shot me.
No, you didn't.
I did.
Did he laugh? Did she laugh?
Well, no, she said, he's a comedy writer and an idiot. He shot himself. And then they all started laughing.
Oh, my gosh. That's a really good story.
That's life.
That's damn funny. Hey, thank you so much for coming on the show today. You're fascinating.
Well, thanks for having me.
Really, you're super interesting. Is there something we should be watching right now? Or something you're passionate about? Right now. Besides Storyworthy.
Well, no. Storyworthy is the only thing I'm passionate about right this minute. I hate talking about projects because I think it jinxes them.
Oh,
and
no
so
worries. I get
everything
it.
I'm kind of writing. You know, Felicia and I have a great thing that I really have a lot of faith in. And I have a partner, Amrita Sen, who her and I are writing a feature for the Indian India's market.
Interesting.
And, you know, I just love writing. I mean, I've returned to a place where I appreciate, you know, I appreciate the gift.
And, you know, obviously 26 years ago when you were writing with that rat in the house, you were writing on a pen and paper. Yeah.
You know what? Even on 70s, I wrote everything on a yellow pad and gave it to the assistant.
Interesting. And yeah. And they typed it out.
Yeah.
And now you're writing on a Mac.
Yeah, I write on a Mac, but still I write it on a yellow pad and then I put it in there.
Interesting.
Because it's just the way it, you know, I started writing
you're
in 90,
yeah.
You know, and I remember they had those little box Macs and I was like, never going to do it. And they're like, you're going to do it because that's how it's going to work here because we can't type your crap in.
That's funny.
So, yeah.
So, in other words, you would vocally, you would read it and it would transcribe it?
No, I had to type it in.
Oh, you were typing
in 1990, 91, you know, that was the first little box Mac that
tiny.
Came out.
Yeah.
You know, and so.
And the screen was tiny.
Yeah,
and
little tiny
there was
tiny
a lot of plastic around it. And then one of them was called the Mac CS, and CS stood for color screen.
Right.
So that was exciting.
That was, yeah.
All right, you guys, we have to wrap it up. I don't want to wrap it up, but we have to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Tweet Mark over there on Twitter at the Mark Brazil. He's not going to tweet back.
It's that Mark Brazil. No, it's that because of the show, which everybody says that something, but I'm like,
are you sure about that?
I'm almost positive. I've been on Twitter lately, but I think it's called that. I think it's called that, Mark. But see, I turned my phone off, so now I can't check.
No,
I'm responsible.
I'm going to tell you right now. No, I swear
it's
to God.
That
it's,
Mark Brazil.
You know why you're... Oh, it is that Mark
Brazil. See, that's the joke.
No. Look, check it out. It's at the Mark Brazil. But
right,
but your
that's
name
correct.
On it is that Mark Brazil. But they would still find you at
the
Mark Brazil.
I always forget the second half of the equation.
So first of all, we're both right. And second of all, that's funny. That's really funny.
It's so egotistical to call yourself the anything, like the Mark Brazil. There's like a guy in Phoenix who's an actuary. He's a Mark Brazil.
I know,
the name.
I know, but that's only because they have to, or like the real Mark Brazil. But you have to, if you're trying to get your social media in order, you know, you do. You know, what the hell would you care about social media?
But I wanted to be that Mark Brazil at a Mark Brazil, which I thought was just nice for all the other Mark Brazils, that I wouldn't say the Mark Brazil. Like, it's like, oh, get in line, you losers.
And then you guys follow me over there as well at Storyworthy. I happen to love Twitter. I like funny people. I scroll Twitter in the middle of the night. That's my thing. I follow Kruger National Park in Africa. That's my jam.
Really?
Yeah, I love looking at these animals in real time.
That's so great.
And then I comment, and they think there's a crazy lady living in L.A., and they're right. So there you go.
That's so awesome, though.
And I want to thank all the sponsors on the show today. And listen, now that I think of it, you didn't hear a sponsor on the show today, but you did last week, didn't you? Third Love Bras, remember those guys? Yeah, support Third Love Bras, and you are, in fact, supporting me. All right, you guys, one more time, on behalf of the very talented Mark Brazil, thank you very much. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.